Right, and welcome to another programme of Out and About. Now, in our last programme of Out and About, I talk with Donnie Hogan, a Columban missionary priest, who left Ireland in 1969 to go work on the missions on the Filipino island of Negros, working alongside other Columbans such as Neil O'Brien. Now, continuing with that interview with Donnie Hogan, here's what else he had to say about his missionary work in the Philippines.
In the 1970s, 1975 was declared as a holy year by the Vatican. And in the Philippines, and particularly in our island, the theme was renewal and reconciliation. That was the theme. So in our diocese, they had a pastoral team, priests and lay people. I mean, they're really fantastic, you know. And we had 16 parishes in the south where we had these basic Christian communities, where the leaders used to meet once a month in a headquarters that had been set up by Neil O'Brien for these retreats that he gave to leaders there. So it was a live-in place. So these, our leaders, would meet every so often. So there was great excitement going on around that time. And then, of course, 75, we began these seminars, Holy Year seminars. And we went with groups, leaders, our leaders. I used to borrow Neil O'Brien's leaders because he was now based in a parish that had a sugar mill in it that was set up by the bishop for the workers in the area, kind of cooperative. And so he had educated, they had kind of trained leaders already, and they joined our leaders. Now, the best leader in our parish was a man who never finished primary school. He was a tailor in his maybe early 30s. But even some of the priests coming from the city centre, when we'd sit in a group and meet with them, they'd say, that man could teach in the university. Because his education was, what can we do for the people? Reflecting on the situation, trying to plan, I was part of the team, you know, trying to get down out of being, not being king of the castle, but being part of this core group and planning, what should we do? And he was brilliant. This is the need. We tried such and such. Then we'd evaluate what happened there. But on one of these seminars, the military sent out word, we are not giving permission for this seminar to take place. In a little, now the only place we could hold it, because it was still martial law, the height of martial law in the 70s, were in these little makeshift chapels, little bamboo with nipa roofing. And if it was a little bit more well off, we'd had the GI galvanized iron on top. But that's where they had these little seminars. They'd come from everywhere in the area. The military banned this seminar that they heard was going on in our parish. And I, like, you know, the way we were brought up, well, if this is what the authorities say, well, we better not risk having it. So I went out to the people in the area, to our leaders in the area. Talk about learning. We learned more than we actually taught in these countries. I go out to say, look, we better, if they're banning it, it's too risky, we better not hold it. The leader, a woman, young woman in her 20s, why? Why won't we hold it? They're banning it. Well, wouldn't it be easy if they want to pick us up? Wouldn't it be, we'd be all gathered in the one place, they could arrest us all at the one time. And I must admit, gee, I went back. My God, I said, the courage of these young people who were going to face the wrath of the military by going against their will. And here I am, an older person, saying, look, we better cancel it. No, we won't cancel. So I said, great. I was still very fearful. We went ahead with it. But the courage of the people, they were ready to face it. It was their lives. They wouldn't have touched me at this stage in the 70s. It was their lives. While they were there, now their houses would be in the mountain, you know, again, wood structure, nipa sides and all this. While they were there, a group that had walked in from I don't know how many kilometres, they walked to the seminar, and they'd be walking home at night time or else sleeping with some of the families in the area. While they were at the seminar, their houses were torched and they were claimed to be suspect subversives. because they were claimed that they fed the NPA, the New People's Army people, when they passed by. But what else could they do? And they also fed the army when they passed by, you know. So, but the courage, that was really what struck me. How, you know, and then, of course, around the same time, because all the leaders were suspect, because there was NPA moving around, New People's Army, the military moving around, five of the people from one remote area that I was only able to visit once a year. You know, this is the kind of thing, and I was on my own at this stage. For about a year and a half, I had somebody with me, and it was wonderful. But he got typhoid, and then it was... But I went out anyway. I heard there were five people had been picked up by the military and brought to the detention centre in Bacolod, 5 hours away, drive. So I set off, contact the lawyer that we had employed, the Columbans supported this diocesan social action office, contacted him, contacted the bishop. I visited then the detention centre to meet these five people from Hagnaya, was the name of the barrio, the little village, remotest area. So I went looking for five people. They brought out five. I knew one. The one person I knew was picked up was a catechist of mine included in this. And I was looking specifically for her. I said, no, this isn't the group I'm looking for. They brought out three groups. There was 15 had been picked up from the area. The only area groups we knew of were this five. 15 from the area. And then she was included in this. So I kind of was there, just saying, look, I'm just visiting, etc., supporting. Then there was a church military meeting. This was an initiative that was taken by the bishops. In our area, we had a bishop like Helder Camara, Monsignor Fortich. But so he would meet regularly with the military, top brass. Any complaints we'd have, we'd bring it to that forum. And very often, the people would be gathered as well. They even brought one up to the mountains from the city. They brought it up to the parish where I was, Magbalio Parish, in the middle of nowhere in the mountains of Negros. But the military were coming up, all these guns all over the place. But anyway, the bishop organized to have these released. And to this day, I have it in one of these albums, an album that I keep, a snap of those days. Here's a photograph from the local newspaper. The bishop, Monsignor, myself, and my name, of course, is spelt wrong. It's spelt as it's pronounced. It's spelt J-U-G-A-N, and J is like a H. So Hogan, and then the social action director, another priest. And there was 27 people released from the parish that I was in. And here's a photograph of them all. The catechist is there in among them. She's the only one that I actually knew personally. And this photograph is there. These are now being released into the hand of the bishop, and they're promising to be on good behavior. So that was in the 70s. Then,
but what talk about, you know, you're up against the might of a military tyranny. Yeah. I mean, that's basically, that's, you know, right. I mean, no rule of law, and just, you know, it's and democracy non-existent. Yeah.
And I remember another really harrowing experience. I was called out. Somebody had said there's a body up somewhere, and called out to bless this body. We went into a remote area in this kind of woods. And here's this body with rocks over it, but he's exposed. Horrendous, exposed to the heat, the sun, and he's obviously been there for a long time, and the smell, just atrocious. So I had to have my face covered, blessed the corpse. I tried to inquire what happened. There wasn't much information. He was a civilian. It's a paramilitary groups. These were operating all over the place. Some paramilitary group had taken him away, and this is where he ended up. Now that, to me, I remember just, I don't know how, I think it was prayer of people at home, that strengthened me. Around this time, I got 40 letters. Just shortly after this time, it was around the time when Neil was in jail.
And they first half of 1980s.
In the 80s.
And that Neil who Donnie Hogan just mentioned was his Columban missionary colleague Neil O'Brien, who along with several others was imprisoned in 1984 on the Filipino island of Negros on trumped up charges in an attempt to undermine their work for justice on behalf of peasant labourers. Now at the time, Charlie Bird visited Negros to cover the story for RTE. Donnie Hogan.
Charlie Bird, they kind of had been going to the jail all the time for, you know, taking pictures, and they decided, look, we need a break from the jail because every news is taking, this jail has been shown, and Neil, we want to see a parish. So Charlie and his group, I think it was from 7 days, came up, and they, Joe Mulholland, they came in up to the parish where I was. And here we are, they wanted to see what was, like, what exactly was happening around the area. And so they took pictures all over the place, baptisms and little people gathering around the basketball, and myself down with some guys selling carabaos. And they got 13 minutes onto the TV of this. After that, fourth class in the convent school where I had begun, 40 students from fourth class, I get these bundles of letters, like in a package from the teacher. Here are the students. This is now 1984. They are now, what, that's 35 years ago? They're in 45 now. But here they are, writing, showing, like doing a little drawing of a television and a little kid. That's me watching you on television. Just, we're all thinking about you and praying for you. And that was kind of, I suppose it was, going up there was a light relief for the team from doing all the photographing in the actual jail itself.
I mean, fair dues
to support.
Yeah, and I mean, fair dues to RTE for sending the crew out and everything. Yes. But kind of, you know, I'd say it was good to know, Donnie, that the Irish people and the Irish nation were behind you.
That's exactly, because that was always our fear, that the news wouldn't get out, you know. Amnesty, we're trying to get things through to Amnesty, pictures taken of people tortured, trying to get it through to Amnesty. But you weren't sure. And all of a sudden you had Charlie Bird on your doorstep. I was there with him in the hotel when he was making his reports. He used to have to unscrew the thing to get a better sound or something from the socket to get in straight line. And making his reports to RT, you knew it was getting out. And then you were hearing back, like even from these children. Even the children knew about what was happening. So it was, what a support. You know, it's like being held up by people at home, you know. Otherwise we couldn't have, I don't know how we would have got through.
For those of you who've just tuned in, I'm Paul Wright and you're listening to Out and About. Thus far in the programme, I've been talking with Donnie Hogan, a Columban missionary priest, who in the year 1969 left his native Ireland to go work as a missionary on the Filipino island of Negros. Donnie Hogan.
1969 arriving, then language school, then into parishes. Again, as I say, we didn't seem to be meeting the needs of the people. Then development of the justice, Action for Justice, into a parish on my own. And that was so difficult. In the mountain. Then coming back to Ireland for 2 years, in 78 to 80, to do kind of a reverse mission, is what it was called. We were going around the parishes talking about it, but then we had a film also on the Philippines, on justice in the Philippines. We used to show that, and then we'd have on a Tuesday night, and we'd have a parish group coming and discussing it. And a very interesting thing, we had Bishop Claver was on it, but Bishop Claver, a Filipino bishop in Mountain Province, he was being interviewed. And when we were there, it was in Whitefriar Street, Neil O'Brien's father happened to be in the group that was there having the discussion afterwards. And he would have been, you know, he would have been government, you know, high up in kind of consultancy and things like that. But wonderful man, Neil Moore O'Brien. But anyway, he asked the question. But Father, he says, isn't that, isn't he a communist? Isn't he suspected of being a communist? And really, I suppose, there was an interesting reaction. You know, I mean, that was one reaction to this kind of film. We noticed, if we went in to some of the other places, like Ballymun and these, different reaction. That film is about here. All of a sudden, they could associate with it. You know, so many in prison, so many, the dangers, the troubles.
Economic deprivation, yeah, and right. The whole, you know, the list goes
that's
on.
Right. That's right. So, anyway, that was 78 to 80. Came back. During that time, I had never left the Philippines. I was getting these little small tape recordings of the fiesta, the songs they used to sing on the balcony and the lay people. And I was literally there, almost danced out. But while I was in Ireland, it meant also that I really wasn't in Ireland. I was
in the twilight zone.
Yeah, kind of. Still, I was traumatized because there had been another person from my parish, a catechist, who had been tortured as well and broke down mentally just before I left the Philippines in 78. So I had been traumatized, and it showed in whatever I'm sure it blocked some of the communications I was making, because in those days, there was no sharing of your experiences or debriefing or trying to, well, what happened? How did
traumatic
you live
stress
with this?
Disorder and everything. You just you were supposed to just get on with it.
How did you live with this? There was no such thing as that. So during those 2 years, I was still trying to work out this trauma, and I didn't work it out. Back to the Philippines, 1980, late 80, into another parish in the mountains, same thing. Again, on my own, the only foreigner in the area. Years later, I discovered my personality type. The last place you should be is in an isolated area and on your own. So you miss out on being able to sit down in the evenings, no matter how close you are to your core group. If somebody from your own culture, somebody going through the same trauma as yourself, to be able to talk about it in the evenings, that was missing. You know, but we did as often as we could. We met in our central house, and there you relaxed, played cards, had a drink, looked out. It was right on the coast. Look out at the South China Sea and the sun setting. That was wonderful for us, you know, kind of thing. Then, at this stage, it was every 3 years we'd come home. So then, came home, went back. Then, I did a sabbatical, which did help me for the first time to get in touch with, there was counselling as part of it, to get in touch with what had been going on in my own life. And that really was 1985, 86, that really was a turning point for me.
Why was that, Johnny? Why was just that you were able to deal with all the, because you had gone through all the Neil O'Brien, you know, imprisonment and all that social justice issues of, you know, in Negros. Yeah. So there was a lot of water under the bridge.
So much of it, though, was, I was only half present. So much of it was like a driven thing. I felt I needed to be at every rally, at everything, going back and forth, following up people who were picked up, etc., by the military. It was kind of a driven thing. So I was only half present when I was there. When I was able to come out, it was like coming up out of a well and being able to breathe fresh air again with the help of somebody counselling you through this. It was CPE, Clinical Pastoral Education, in a hospital setting, and then reflecting in a group as to what was going on in our own lives, and then having a personal supervisor who you could share whatever you wanted to. And that, from being driven, you know, all of a sudden, and it was partly false spirituality. You know, we'd been grown up with this thing of take things hard. If it's harder, it's more meritorious. So take things hard. But caring for self was not part of it. We grew up believing that time given to yourself was time taken away from the people. So it really took this time out and a little extra course in spirituality to all of a sudden realize, wait a minute, you need to take care of yourself.
In other words, know your limits.
Know your limits and know yourself and pace yourself accordingly. And that was wonderful. When I came back after these sabbaticals, I was taken out from Negras and put in with our students. These would be candidates. These would be from 16, 17, 18, up to 22, going through college. And these would be with the hope that some of them might become Columbans. So it was like an initial stage, helping them to see if they could decide. So I was there for 6 years, enjoyed it, but cut off from parish in the sense that all of a sudden you were dealing with the one age group, all young men, and away from the young and the old. And but I enjoyed that time. You know, it was, I was able also to give time to myself and say a few prayers.
It wasn't as hectic, yeah. And whereabouts were you based during those 6 years?
During those 6 years, it was on another island, Cebu, which, of course, is Cebuano. It's, the language is the same as Mindanao. So I actually did a short course in that. So Cebuano, then going to Mindanao, I could get by, except in the Muslim area where it was Maranao. But I did that and then went off after I was in between times of holidays and that, went off for a 9 month sabbatical to the States, California.
What year was that, Dave?
That'd be 91, 92. So I would have been 51, 52. And during that time, it was, we had a lot of time where you process things. And that was kind of salutary for myself. It was, and then you were with a mixed group. It was relational also, from the point of view of just human, as you, as a human being, how do you relate to other people? So it was a wonderful experience. I came back to the Philippines fresh from that, back into formation again with the students, and was invited then to facilitate some meetings that were being held in Mindanao by another group, you know, Columbans. We had big numbers that time, maybe over 125 in the Philippines. And basically, it was discernment for who would become the regional director in the Philippines. And basically, so I was facilitating this discernment in two areas in Mindanao. Other guys were doing it in other areas. Then when the voting came up, out of nowhere, because I wasn't on any district councils, which fellas usually, you know, for the island themselves, my name shot to the top of the list. So in 1993... I became regional director in the Philippines. I was there in Manila.
You were the boss.
The boss. Nobody paid any attention to me. So I was the
and isn't it great to be an authority? All the responsibility and nothing, you know. No. You know, you could, everyone can blame you.
So in 93 to 99. And in 1999, I was assigned to the States because we had an international formation house in Chicago for those in theology from Peru, Chile, Korea, Fiji, and the Philippines. So I was assigned there to be part of a team there. The only problem was when I arrived, that would be in 1999, so many of the students from Korea and some of the other places had actually dropped out, and some of the ones expected didn't arrive. So basically, I was redundant as soon as I arrived, or almost.
Not quite.
So, but at least I did some supervision with some of the students, especially with the Filipinos.
Whereabouts were you based?
In Chicago.
Chicago.
In Chicago. And they were going to CTU, Chicago Theological Union, was the thing. But so again, I knew from the day I was in, I won't be there because I was the last man in. I was going to be the first man out. So I began dialoguing again with our boss in Ireland. What was the next step? As we dialogued, it turned out there were three guys in Ballymun Parish, the only parish we had in the country. It was kind of like, we were giving back something. So we took St. Joseph's Parish in Ballymun, a Poppendry area. So it's a vacancy. Well, three guys were there. Two were going back to South America immediately. And there was one remaining who I knew from the Philippines, Terry Tuig. So, two of us, myself and another chap home from the Philippines, Val Cain, we were assigned there as well. So there was three of us assigned to Ballymun then to take over from the others. Again, culture shock. I knew when I was going out to the Philippines, I expected to be. I really didn't realise the change. I had never worked in Ireland in a parish. I had never worked in a city parish. It was always remote, away from authorities, as it were. But here I was in the middle of Ballymun. I must admit, it took me 2.5 years to actually land. The people were wonderful. We had a fantastic team, core group, because the two guys from Latin America had followed this basic Christian community. So they had this team. They decided things for the parish. It was wonderful. But for those 2.5 years, I really knew, like I was standing on one foot, I wasn't really landed. Interestingly, I woke up one morning and started making decisions about the parish. I put it down like re-entry. How, you know, after 30 years, what is it like to come back? And I started making decisions. Terry Tuig was sitting at the table opposite me. He said, I think, Donny, he said, I think you've landed. I said to him, Terry, this morning, that was my very thought this morning. So I landed.
So it took you two and a half years to kind of, you know, get over, you know, being back in Ireland and leaving behind 30 years, yes. 30, very eventful, very adventurous, you know, a trauma thrown in there as well, and a lot more besides years in the Philippines and other places as well. Yeah. And now you're back in the home. But it wasn't easy to come back. Very difficult.
Yeah, so difficult. And, well, Ireland also had changed, but I had changed as well. So many things had happened. But from that, after that, there was a, you know, I could feel a new freedom and relationship within the group. We were getting closer and all this. So a year and a half after that, that's 4 years in Ballymun, I was called in to Dalgan.
Dalgan, here in County Meath, where we're doing the interview. So this is about mid-noughties, is it? This 2005, 6?
This is 2004.
2004.
And at this stage, it again, there was a discernment here. Who's going to be the director or vice director? I became vice director, 2004.